And this is KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 8:06 on this Monday morning, August 4th. Currently 65 degrees here in Old Town Park City. No report from Cedric Haynes this morning, so I'll let you know that National Weather Service telling us that we have got a red flag warning in effect through tonight here in both Park City and Heber Valley areas. Expect to see some patchy smoke after about 3 o'clock this afternoon. Otherwise, sunshine and a high of 86. 54 is our overnight low with some patchy smoke. Clearing up, though, later on with those breezes, looking for a high of 86 tomorrow, 88 on Wednesday and Thursday, dropping back down to 84 on Friday. Still not a drop of rain in sight. 65 degrees again currently in the Heber Valley, looking for sunshine and a high of 90 with some patchy smoke tonight. 44 is the overnight low, looking for mostly sunny skies and a high of 91 tomorrow, 92 Wednesday, up to 93 on Thursday, and back down to 90 for Friday.
This weather report is brought to you in part by ABC4 Utah, abc4.com, and Deer Valley Resorts, deervalley.com.
It's 8:07. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Again, Summit County, stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with Summit County Chief Deputy Casey Bates and PIO Skylar Talbot with an update from Summit County Law Enforcement. Heber City Manager Matt Brower calling in, previewing Tuesday's City Council meeting. From the Historic Park City Alliance, Executive Director Ginger Wicks with details on this year's Mountain Mixer, as well as a look at the summer season. And from Diversified Bars and Restaurants, owner Jesse Shetler, and Marketing Director Matt Sullivan with details on the 25th anniversary celebration of the No Name, the celebration happening on Thursday. Taking a look now at some local news, final attendance numbers for the 56th annual Kimball Arts Festival are still a few days out, but based on comments from artists and the Kimball Arts Center director, it appears that business is good. Arts Center Executive Director Ollie Milliken says he expects increased attendance and financial success compared to last year's Arts Festival.
We don't have audience numbers yet, but we know that our financial numbers are higher than last year. So that means more people came to Main Street and enjoyed the festival. So our bar numbers and the different sales that we have with the merchandise has increased. All artists that I've talked to have been really positive about the weekend.
Nearly 200 artists from across the country displayed their work over 3 days. Yves Guyotin, originally from France but now living in California, won this year's Best of Show Award. He creates bronze figure sculptures that he says juxtapose both the volume of the sculpture and its architectural elements.
In general, overwhelmingly,
instead of adding shapes, abstract shapes, so it's mostly like negative space. She's missing part of a torso in the middle, so you can literally go through it. This gold leaf on each side, so the sun glow into the sculpture. It's really happy with how it came out.
This is the fourth time Guyotin has been accepted into the Park City Festival and the third year in a row that he's won an award. This year it was for Best of Show.
It's amazing to be part of this show. It's a very difficult show to get in, so it's truly an honor to be part of this show, and I'm so happy to be here back again. It's a great location. I love it here.
Park City painter Karen Miller Kendall won the Best Local Artist Award this year. Her mixed media abstract landscape is used acrylic paint, which she layers and scrapes away and then embeds hand-fabricated collage paper. She says it's been a great weekend and sales were solid the first 2 days. Winning the award was icing on the cake.
It's such a great feeling of validation for the work that I do. And to be honored like that, I was shocked and super surprised and really, really, really honored. So I'm so appreciative.
And for another local artist, Mitch Bedke, this was the first time that he made it into the Kimball Arts Festival, showcasing his kiln-formed glass art.
It's been a fantastic weekend. Friday, had my best day ever. Yesterday, I beat it. So, yeah, there's people out buying art.
Milliken says reaction to the news this past week that the Kimball Arts Center will be moving to Kimball Junction as part of the Dakota Pacific development has been overwhelmingly encouraging.
In general, overwhelmingly positive, overwhelmingly supportive, and I think this is really exciting for people. And so coupled with the Arts Fest, this has been a fantastic weekend.
Several other awards for each of the artistic mediums were handed out Saturday night based on a jury vote. The full list of winners will be published online in a couple of days. In the studio now with an update from the Summit County Sheriff's Office, I have Chief Deputy Casey Bates along with PIO Skylar Talbot. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Skylar, first, a couple of very serious accidents on Interstate 80 this week. Do you have any updates?
Leslie, we had the two accidents on Interstate 80 and then another very, very tragic motorcycle crash with a fatality of a juvenile boy up Weber Canyon just several weeks before. These accidents, they're so tragic when they happen. And, you know, we're seeing an influx this time of year, as we always do, with motorcycles on the road, increased traffic, especially coming into the county, you know, folks recreating, going up Mirror Lake Highway. The influx in traffic, it's just another reminder to folks to really be aware of the traffic around you. You know, these accidents, they are accidents, but avoidable in some situations. So we're certainly urging folks to be aware of the traffic around them.
They happen within or just outside of the construction area. So is construction due? To blame here?
Yes, we've got the paving, the repaving going on I-80, and the lanes, they switch around. And, you know, when you're flowing in traffic and then abruptly merge down to one lane, that affects all of the traffic behind you. So, again, I don't have the specific details. It sounds like though traffic was merging and merging very quickly. When you merge in front of someone, you have to remember all of the traffic behind you then has to come to a stop as well. So, you know, be aware of, hey, if I'm planning to merge into another lane, I've got to do that safely because the traffic behind me, they're also going to have to make adjustments in their driving. So again, those were handled by the Highway Patrol. They have the primary jurisdiction over those. As far as the Sheriff's Office, we're just a force multiplier for them. So we're going to be out, in these two cases, we were out assisting in traffic control, which anyone in the area knows that when those accidents happen, it's affecting traffic for a very long time.
Right. And I was going to say, I mean, what caused that huge backup? They kept going on with the construction, even though the accidents had happened, and then they picked up construction and went later than they had.
Yeah. So, the Highway Patrol, of course, anytime there's a fatality, the investigation does take some time. So there's that aspect that's going to slow things down in traffic. And then, UDOT then has to come and catch up on the scheduled road work, which in this case extended, I think, much longer than they were anticipating.
Okay.
And Leslie, I just think it's important to mention that people just need to be patient. Slow down, be patient, and let things work it out. We're trying to move as fast as we can, but it's an important investigation. And if people can just have patience, just in daily traffic, just daily driving, have some patience and courtesy.
All right, let's move on. August 1st, the county instituted stage 2 fire restrictions. What does this mean?
So, stage 2 fire restrictions are statewide. Governor Cox has declared a state of emergency due to the escalating wildfire threats. What does that mean for the county? It means that there are no open fires. This includes campfires or stove fires. You'll see as you go into the state parks that all of the campfires are covered. I believe it's orange. I think I've been watching them cover all of those. Very important that we all remain extremely cautious during this time, make smart decisions. And we encourage those who see anyone burning fires in the county to call our sheriff's office and report it.
Okay, we've been lucky so far.
Yeah, we have been lucky, and we're certainly we're not out there to try and be the fun police. I get it. I love camping. I love having the fire going while you're camping. It can make all the difference, but it's not worth it. These folks dealing with the Monroe Canyon fire, I mean, that's just gotten to be so out of hand. I think they're over 50,000 acres now.
And,
we have to take every single chance we can to be careful, be vigilant, and make sure we're not putting our community at risk.
All right. Moving on, 7 Utah counties sheriff departments have signed agreements with ICE. Summit County has not, though. And do you plan to?
Not at this time, but I think what is important, Leslie, for those people that don't know what this means, what is this, right? What is this agreement? And it's part of the Immigration and Nationality Act. It was created under the Illegal Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act of 1996. And part of that is called the 287G. And it allows local law enforcement agencies to collaborate with ICE. And there's three types of agreements that they can, or models that they can agree to. At this time, the Summit County Sheriff's Office has not entered into any 287G agreement. And at this time, the sheriff and I have talked about it extensively, and there's no current plans to enter into one.
Right. So why would the county do, you know, into an agreement?
That's a good question. You look at data, you look at what is happening within our county. What we look at is, what does that mean when you enter into an agreement? And when you enter into an agreement, you are basically putting some of your deputies, and they're being trained by ICE to identify criminals and they're with status, right? So what we're looking at is our resources are already stretched. And there's no data that shows a need for this partnership at this time. We already, basically what this is it's a collaboration with ICE, and we collaborate with our federal partners, always have, and but it doesn't make sense right now for us to enter into an agreement of or any of those models.
Well, and just to add on to what the chief said, I think it's really important to highlight that, you know, these agreements, because the sheriff's office at this time isn't entering into one of these agreements, doesn't mean that we're not collaborating in some situations with ICE in this case, or any other federal agency, because we do that. We always have done that. And when it's appropriate, we will continue to do that. But at this time, like the chief said, it's just we don't have any indication or anything on our radar that suggests that one of these formal agreements is appropriate right now.
It's my understanding, though, that every jail in Utah needs to notify ICE if, in fact, they do have an undocumented resident in jail?
So that's always been the case, Leslie, since I was hired. Basically, what it is when someone, anyone, breaks the law, you're identified. And when you're booked into jail, you're identified there, and regardless of status, we have to identify everybody that we arrest and that's brought to jail. Procedures for those who we cannot identify have been longstanding. And we do notify immigration for those who commit crimes and are booked into jail. And we've talked about this before, and that has always been done.
All right. Would ICE let the county know, the sheriff's department know that they're in town or
yes,
in county?
Absolutely. So 11 years ago, Sheriff Smith and Chief Carpenter, we have an agreement with ICE. We have an agreement with all of our federal partners. It's just an agreement. It's a voluntary agreement between all of us that when they are in our county, they let us know. It's for officer safety purposes. And they contact dispatch. They let us know when they're in our county. And all of the federal agencies do that. And they've always done that.
Yeah, lots of rumors swirling. I mean, we've heard, you know, at department stores, at, you know, entrances to gated communities where there have been these ICE raids, but in fact, nothing's happened. Is
correct.
That correct?
Yeah, I get text messages and I get phone calls saying, you know, do you know anything about this? And I understand the fear. I understand that it may look like ICE is here, but we have a lot of undercover people working for our agency. We also have people in unmarked vehicles, and not once have those phone calls or those text messages been true. Like, I've contacted our dispatch, and they're not in our county.
Yeah, just because there's an unmarked police vehicle on the side of the road is, you know, shouldn't be an immediate indication that there's some sort of ICE operation, because
correct,
like the chief said, I mean, I can't tell you how many inquiries I've had, and zero of them have been incidents where you know, it's been an ICE operation.
Okay. A bill passed this past legislative session that impacted what the county does. Tell me a little bit about this. It has something to do with behavioral health?
Yes. So in the county and throughout the state, actually, but I'm going to talk about our vehicles and within our county, you will be seeing stickers on all of our vehicles with QR codes. And those QR codes are going to be linking... they will link to local mental health resources within our county. This was a House bill that was passed last year by Representative Clancy, who was previous law enforcement. The intentions of this bill is to connect the public with local behavioral health services. We've been working with Aaron Newman with behavioral health, and there were different ways that you could do this, and we chose to do a QR code and a sticker on our vehicles. So this is another resource for those looking for information. These are for people that could be in crisis, but they're also for people who just want to know about the information and resources that are available in our community. And those resources are going to be both in English and in Spanish.
All right, yeah. So the stickers identify themselves. It's like, I mean, not just some random QR code.
Right. No, it'll be clear, you know, as to what the QR code is going to do. And I want to just make sure that everyone understands this is really, it's meant to complement what we already have in place. We have a number of, services in place. We have our mobile crisis outreach team. Our deputies are still receiving their same, crisis intervention training. This really is just one additional thing that's going to really help connect those who may be in need to all of those resources that are available for them.
Okay, and real quick, Warren, just to mention that the Summit County Sheriff's Office was the winning bidder, I should say, with the Meals on Wheels contract. Tell me about that.
Yes, we're excited for this. We actually tried to and bid for this 2 years ago and were unsuccessful. The bid came up again, and we were awarded, and now we'll be providing the lunch for the local seniors 5 days a week, and we're preparing for that right now. It should start at September, October-ish. We're setting things up. Our staff have visited other successful programs. We're not the first corrections facility that have done this. There are other corrections facilities that we have went and visited so that we can basically make sure that we're successful. And so we, and best practices, we went and seen what works and what doesn't work, and they've given us great information. So we're excited, and this has actually created two more positions for our incarcerated individuals to assist with their meal prep. So we're really excited for this.
You know, another huge win with this Meals on Wheels contract is there's no cost to the taxpayers. You know, we're going to be able to increase our services to the community in a huge way, and this is all funded through a contract with Mountain Land Associations of Government, MAG. Anytime we can, increase our services with no additional cost to taxpayers, we're certainly all about that.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. We'll see you next month. Thanks for your time
this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
That is Chief Deputy of Summit County Sheriff's Department, Casey Bates, along with PIO Skylar Talbot. The Heber City Council meets tomorrow. On the phone with a preview of the meeting, I have City Manager Matt Brower. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
Let's see. The council meeting starts at 6 o'clock tomorrow, and the council is set to approve a resolution that adopts safety incentive bonuses for qualifying jobs deemed high risk. Qualifying city employees can earn $500 a year. So who's eligible, and how do you qualify?
The employees that would be eligible are those that are in high-risk positions identified by the workers' compensation organization. These would be police officers, public works, airport operators, and essentially you're qualified to receive the bonus if you're not in any accidents, primarily. And if you are in an accident, we'll evaluate the cause, who's at fault, and we'll evaluate the amount of the loss, and that will determine whether you continue to get a bonus or not.
Mm. So the safety committee says that, as you mentioned, to avoid accidents. How many accidents does the city typically deal with in a year?
I am proud to say that number has been going down extensively the last couple of years. Unfortunately, we had a horrific accident about 3 years ago. A young man nearly lost his life in a trench collapse. And we want to make sure that our employees continue to go home every night to their families and come back to work the next day.
Yeah. Can you give us a ballpark? What do these accidents cost the city?
Yeah, so workers' comp claims, which cover injuries to employees on the job, have been coming down. I don't recall the actual number. What happens is we get annual premiums set by the workers' comp organization that is based upon claims. And so the fewer claims that we have, the lower the annual premium rates are going to be, not just for workers' comp, but for general liability and auto as well.
Okay. There was some debate about this during the budget discussions earlier this summer. Councilmember Mike Johnston thought that safety should be the expectation and shouldn't need an extra reward. So what are your thoughts?
His points are strong points. I see it just a little bit differently. I see it as a pay for performance, that if you are safe and you drive safely and you're not in any accidents or have any work claims, we're going to award you through the safety bonus. If, however, you're engaged in an accident or an injury of some sort, we're going to take a hard look at that to see if you're still eligible for the safety award. This is all about trying to create a culture of safety, and I think we can best do that through pay for performance.
Okay. How much have you budgeted then for this program?
It's about $32,000 in fiscal year 26, and we believe that if we are successful in reducing the incidence of accidents, we'll see that savings through reductions in premiums.
Well, at only $500 a year and budgeting $32,000, that sounds like you're expecting a lot of accidents.
Well, actually, what that means is there's no accidents because all the employees would be awarded the safety bonus. We have nearly 130, 140 employees. And so what we have to assume is there will be no accidents. And, of course, if there are, that number would be reduced as we evaluate each of those incidents.
Okay. Let's see. This month's development report includes a site plan for the new Wasatch County Government Building, which will be built by Southfield Park. Do you have any updates on plans for the current administration building next door to City Hall?
None yet. We are hopeful to continue working with Wasatch County to purchase that parcel. That is an important parcel for us as we look to facilitate the findings in our Vision Central Heber and our Vision Heber 2050 plans. We're hoping to work to a purchase-sale agreement over the next 6 months or so. We also committed to the county that we'd work with them on potentially what's called a feasibility and market analysis, which would allow us to evaluate what types of uses would allow for the biggest return of benefit to the community. And so we need to go through that process to find out exactly what will replace the existing county building.
Okay. Moving on to affordable housing, some county leaders have expressed concern about the city's decision to use affordable housing fees in lieu to buy the Wasatch Wave building. Do you believe this was an appropriate way to spend money intended for affordable housing?
I do. I very much do. If you look at the broader plans, we are achieving two public policy initiatives by renegotiating the Jordanelle Agreement, specifically their affordable housing requirements. Their initial agreement requires them to build 576 affordable housing units at 80% average median income. What we've been able to do is monetize 200 of the 576 units at a value of about $7 million. And what we intend to do is assemble land as our first policy initiative in the downtown, consistent with the Envision Central Heber initiative. And the second policy initiative is to, as we redevelop the downtown, is to facilitate affordable housing units in the downtown. And what we intend to do is work with qualified developers for redevelopment, cash out the sale of that land, and then reinvest it into another affordable housing project. So cash is king. And in this case, it gives us much more flexibility to pull off various affordable housing projects.
Jason Glidden of the Mountain Lands Community Housing Trust commented at a recent city council meeting that he doesn't think Heber City can build 200 units of housing for $7 million in fees and lieu. So what's your response to that?
We'll see. We've had several developers come to us wanting to participate in affordable housing units. We intend to build affordable housing units in the downtown area. But it's also important to note that many of these units could quite have possibly been built on the backside of the hills in the Jordan Dale Ridge development. That is not an ideal place for affordable housing. It's not near transportation. It's not near school. It's not near employment. And so by monetizing it, potentially building a large number of the downtown or other places within the central Heber area, I think it's a lot more meaningful affordable housing for those who actually need it.
All right. And kind of looking forward, what is Heber City's long-term plan to tackle the affordable housing problem?
Well, we have been successful at negotiating in all of our development agreements, including the Jordan Dale Ridge and all of the agreements for the North Village area, affordable housing requirements. The developers have agreed to build a certain number of affordable housing requirements or pay a fee in lieu. And so they have that flexibility built into each of those agreements. In fact, I believe Heber City is the only city in Wasatch County who has negotiated these and in the best position to provide affordable housing.
Yeah, these are no longer allowed, though, right? With legislation?
That is correct. The state legislature did do away with mandated affordable housing requirements, but these are negotiated between two willing parties. So these are very permissible under state law. And what we've done as a condition of annexation is negotiate these affordable housing requirements with the developers. So very permissible. And we will have a large number of affordable housing units coming online over the next, hopefully, 10, 20, 30 years.
All right. And back to the purchase there of the WAVE building, it sounds like the city is getting some pushback from the county regarding that. I mean, why is that a good expenditure for Heber City?
Well, I've not heard the Wasatch County as a uniform body say anything about that. The purchase of the WAVE building, again, is consistent with our plans laid out in our Vision Central Heber initiative, where we are trying to assemble very strategic parcels of property to allow for mixed-use development. That is to facilitate the downtown into a type of destination, not just for our locals, but for visitors. Our goal is to, once we've assembled the right parcels, is to work with qualified developers to redevelop these parcels to mixed use, where we'd have commercial on the first floor, dining, shopping opportunities, and of course residential on the second and maybe the third floor, including affordable housing. And so the city is trying to manage its own destiny by assembling these properties. Great things don't happen by happenstance, and so I applaud the city council for taking these bold initiatives at trying to realize the Envision Heber 2050 and the Envision Central Heber initiatives.
All right. It looks like the council meeting tomorrow also includes an update on the CRA, the Community Reinvestment Agency. What can you tell us about the tax increment projections for reinvigorating downtown Heber?
Yeah, so by way of context, Heber City approached both the Wasatch County and Wasatch County School Board back in late 2024, seeking their support for what's called an interlocal agreement, which would allow us to generate what's called tax increments that would be reinvested in the downtown area. Tax increment is not a new tax. It's essentially the increased value coming off redevelopment of parcels in the downtown. We didn't get support from either party. We intend to hopefully make another run at it with a smaller project area. And what we're hoping to do is take the new numbers and present them to council tomorrow night. Get their support, and then discuss how we want to approach our partners, again, both the county and the school board, and seeking their support for the required interlocal agreements. Zions Bank Public Finance has given those to me over the weekend. I have not had a chance to review them. Hope to do that today, present them tomorrow at the council meeting.
Okay, you're not giving up on this, on the county council or the school district, huh?
No, the downtown, it remains our number one policy priority, and that's been unyielding for this council. And so what we're trying to do is modify what we call the project area. We heard both entities indicate they wanted a smaller project area, so we're going to offer them a smaller project area, and we'll then share with them what we expect the increment might be off that area.
So if the tax increment remains its current size, how would the downtown plans need to change?
We would obviously, with the smaller project area, we would generate less increments, and so we'd have to evaluate, you know, where we invest that at to generate, the greatest return on investment, generate the greatest alignment with the Indigenous Central Heber. Our number one priority is the burying of the power lines. We've heard from multiple developers that the cost to bury the power lines in the downtown area is exorbitant. It is a game killer or a project killer. And so we probably still look very hard at trying to figure out how we can leverage the increment to bury those power lines to eliminate that barrier to redevelopment of the downtown.
All right. Let's see. You've accomplished the City Park band shell. What's next for the revitalization?
I'm glad you asked that. We're looking at partnering with a qualified design team to look at the work that Roger Brooks did and that my council accepted back in early 2025 with the completion of phase one, as you mentioned, the band shell and the conversion of 200 South into a festival street. We're looking at to phase two, and we put an RFQ on the street last week to qualified design teams and architects to take Roger Brooks' project to the next step, to provide concepts, schematic plans, as well as construction documents. And this process will allow us to engage the public to continue to get their input on what phase two looks like. So I anticipate over the next year or so, we'll be working with design teams to really dial in what phase two will look like at the park.
Okay. Also on the agenda is the UDOT traffic mitigation efforts, but no report on this. Any idea what this item is about?
Yeah, it's simply a verbal staff report updating the council on some changes UDOT has already made to the lighting in the downtown. I should say the traffic lighting in the downtown. We've had several complaints that crossing the street is perilous, that traffic in the downtown is becoming more challenging. And so UDOT has gone through the lights, the five lights in the downtown, orchestrated a sequential timing, allowed for more time for pedestrians to cross the roadway, ultimately trying to enhance the safety for pedestrians and the flow of traffic through the downtown. So it's all about simply a coordination of the traffic lights owned by UDOT in the downtown area.
Okay. I'm going to leave it there. Matt, hey, thanks for your time this morning.
Of course. Thank you.
That's Heber City Manager Matt Brower. Park City's cocktail competition is back in the studio with details. I have the Executive Director of the Historic Park City Alliance, Ginger Wicks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Maybe just before we get into that, for those who may be unfamiliar, maybe you could just briefly describe the mission and role of the Historic Park City Alliance.
Well, the Historic Park City Alliance is not the association hosting the cocktail contest. That would be the restaurant association. But the alliance represents member businesses on Main Street, businesses that choose to join the alliance. We support them in a variety of ways, marketing, advocacy, relationship with the city, any issues that they may have on the street. We try to help support that. So that it's a cohesive environment for all.
Okay. And again, you also serve as executive director of the Park City Restaurant Association.
I wear a lot of hats.
Yeah, you do. Okay. So back to the Mountain Mixer then. This has been reimagined. That after last year's cheating scandal. So tell us what's changed.
Well, with just backing up a little bit with COVID, we're forced to switch to an online platform in terms of hosting the cocktail contest. And it, with the liquor laws in the state of Utah, it does make it somewhat challenging to host an in-person cocktail contest. And so we created the online format, and that has been successful for many, many years. As you noted, last year we unfortunately had a cheating scandal where bots were created to infiltrate the voting system. And so last year we were not able to award a winner. And so after some deep dive with the board, we decided to attempt to bring back an in-person contest. So we went out and through the month of July, we received 20 entries. We couldn't take all 20 entries to the live event because we would be there for 2 days. just the time constraints weren't there. So we hired some secret judges who went out throughout the month of July and sipped and savored all the amazing entries. And from those results, we narrowed it down to the top 10 who will go and compete on August 21st at the Silver Lake Lodge at Deer Valley Resort in a live cocktail contest.
Okay. And at that, it's going to be a ticketed event.
It is a ticketed event. Tickets are on sale right now on Eventbrite. You can go to our website, parkcityrestaurants.com, and purchase your tickets. It is a ticketed event only because the space can only host so many people, as you can imagine. And the audience will be able to help choose the winner in that they will be voting on showmanship and presentation and how the mixologist presents themselves. We have three judges that will be scoring on the taste of the beverage, and then we'll combine those scores and announce the winner that evening.
Okay, tickets are how much?
Tickets are $30.
Okay, and parking is always a challenge.
Parking will be available at the Chateau Deer Valley.
Okay, so August 21st,
we'll have a winner. And what I would say is tickets are going fast. As of this morning, we only have 37 left. So I think once we announced the winners last Friday, it's been very, very popular. So if you're interested in being a part of this amazing event, I encourage you to purchase your ticket sooner than later.
Okay, and besides bragging rights, I mean, what does it mean to win this mixer?
Well, the winning mixologist will get $1,000 cash, so that's pretty amazing for them. And then, of course, bragging rights, and we'll highlight the winning cocktail in a variety of marketing efforts, promoting the mixologist and the winning establishment. And then we're also looking at taking the top 10 mixologists and drinks and creating a cocktail book that will be for sale later in the year.
From this year or from
just from this year? Okay. Just from highlighting these top 10 finalists. So look for that to come out later.
All right. Kind of putting your HPCA hat back on.
I mean,
how has the summer gone so far? I mean, what are you hearing from merchants and restaurants?
Well, when you called me to do this interview, I reached out to a variety of different businesses on Main Street. And what I would say, it's a little bit all over the board, but nobody is saying they're up. Almost said that it was a very, very slow start. Numbers seem to be better in July. Some are indicating that July looks like it was leveling off or flat. But I haven't heard from anybody that they're up this year. So I would say under or flat would be the response I have heard.
All right. Well,
obviously, it's going to vary across the gamut of businesses, but that's what I've heard.
All right. And what about Arts Fest Weekend? Have you heard, had any
I reached out on my way in this morning to a few businesses. Some said they felt it felt a little busier on the street. But obviously in terms of numbers, hard to say so early, but some said it felt busier.
Yeah.
Really busy.
Sure looked like a lot of people, though, were on those outdoor dining decks.
Yeah. So hopefully those numbers will come in strong.
All right. So, I mean, I guess as executive director, any current focus for HPCA at this point?
I think our focus, you know, we're certainly paying attention to all the discussions around the Main Street area plan as they look at implementing or exploring certain aspects of that overall plan. I think pedestrianizing Main Street seems to be a topic that continues to percolate to the top within that plan. And so just wanting to be a part of that conversation and making sure that it makes sense for the street. Obviously, we're very, very interested and concerned about what's happening with China Bridge. Obviously, we all recognize that something needs to happen to China Bridge because it's corroding and falling down. So wanting to make sure that when they go in and redo that structure, that is going to be a huge impact to Main Street. And what does that mean? And how do we replace that parking while it's being redone and rebuilt and all of those things? So I think those are really two big topics that are on our minds always. And then, you know, just continuing to drive business to Main Street and making it easy for guests to get to Main Street as well as employees, making sure that when we close Main Street for the Kimball Arts Festival or any other event, that the shuttles make sense and the employees can get in and out for their shifts. One concern I think we saw with the Arts Festival is that we're very, very focused on the guest, and sometimes the employees are not a priority in terms of running shuttles that make sense.
Yeah. That Main Street area plan, are you on some kind of stakeholders group? Or, I mean, it just seems like it was a big thing and now we haven't heard anything about it.
Yeah, I believe the stakeholder group has dismantled. That is my understanding. We did have a fair number of board members that were part of that. The city, Chris Eggleton at the city, has been great in trying to keep us in the loop on the next steps of that. So, you know, we just want to be involved and part of the conversation for sure with whatever they're deciding to do and how they're analyzing it.
Yeah. All right. I was thinking, you know, how you said it, things started out so slow. We had a ton of construction on Main Street. That could have been
part of it, yes. And yeah. I'm so happy to say the water line project, I'm sure you've heard this before, but it is done. Yay.
And it's working.
And it's working, yes. So thanks to everybody for all their efforts as we got through that.
Okay. Ginger, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I just, thanks for the time. And oh, as always, I hope everybody will get out and purchase tickets for the Mountain Mixer and support our amazing mixologist that we have in town.
Okay. Again, and that's happening at Silver Lake on August 21st.
Correct.
People can get tickets how?
ParkCityRestaurants.com.
Okay. Thanks so much, Ginger.
Thank you.
Ginger Wicks, again, the executive director of both the Park City Restaurants Association and Historic Park City Alliance. Well, the No Name Saloon is celebrating its 25th anniversary and hosting a community party on Thursday. In the studio with details and a bit about the popular local watering hole, I have marketing director Matt Sullivan. On the phone is the owner of Diversified Bars and Restaurant, Jesse Shetler. Good morning to both of you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having us.
Jesse, you there?
Hi, good morning, Leslie, and good morning, Shelley.
Hey, yeah. Jesse.
Maybe, Jesse, we'll start with you. Maybe you can start by telling us the story behind the No Name Saloon, how it all began 25 years ago.
Some great folklore there for sure for anybody who's been here for longer than 25 years. So No Name Saloon, you know, we opened in 2000. Prior to that, the establishment that was in there preceding No Name Saloon, again, prior to that, was a famous old watering hole called Alamo Draft House. Ironically, I actually tended bar there, and the establishment next door, the club, I tended bar there for a couple of years in the mid-80s, and the previous owners of the Alamo, when their lease had expired in 1999, and the owner of the property didn't want to give them a new lease, for his own reasons. I mean, the building was in great disrepair and, you know, whatever other reasons he had. But anyways, myself and a couple of friends were able to get the lease there to the building located at 447 Main Street, again called the Alamo. And, we reopened as the Alamo briefly, and I immediately was hit with a cease and desist order from the previous tenants. Unbeknownst to us, they did in fact own the rights to the Alamo name. I think it was about 10 months, Leslie, in federal copyright or trademark court, that we lost the case. They did own the rights to the name. And frankly, I mean, I had to come up with another name. And being as this had been such a beloved saloon on Main Street since 1959 to 1999, it's like, what the heck am I going to call this place? You know, it just seemed to me like there was a no-win you know, there was no winning in it for me, no matter what name I came up with. So hence the No Name Saloon.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard, during the 70s reunion, it was brought back as kind of the Alamo name.
But just, yeah, I did receive some messages about that. Yeah, that was very clever, and I like it. I was unfortunately unable to make that 70s reunion. I had an emergency down in Florida I had to attend to, so...
Well, looking back over those 25 years, any moments or milestones that maybe stand out to you?
Well, I mean, you know, the list is long and we don't have that much time to go through it. But, you know, things that might stand out the most are really just the community involvement, I think that... You know, given the location of this building, given the longevity of the history of the building, you know, I think just community involvement is the greatest part of success for all of us at No Name Saloon. You know, that with, you know, I mean, we've been raising families at No Name for years. You know, I mean, we've got people that have gotten married in there, people that work there that have met each other, customers. You know, I mean, we've had funerals in there. We've had celebrations of life. I mean, you know, the list is long. But now on a physical point, you know, some of the things that I've done along with our landlord, Mark Stemler, you know, we've really developed that entire property. I mean, we've used every square inch. You know, we went all the way back to Park Avenue. You know, we've quadrupled the size of this place from what it originally started as. Actually, even more than four times the size, because there's a full basement down there too, you know, for storage. I mean, you know, so we've really grown the establishment. We've been able to, you know, keep pace, or try our best to keep pace with the growth and development of Park City. You know, like it or not, it's here. And, you know, we either keep up or that's it, you know. So we've been successful in being able to manage the growth and continue being a big part of this community.
Yeah, and the building, of course, 120 years old. So you've got some ongoing, I'm guessing, maintenance every day. Yeah.
Matt, yeah, which by the way, Leslie, Sully and Ronnie Wettig wear that hat.
Okay.
Those hats, yeah.
Sully, as I mentioned, Thursday, you're going to be celebrating the anniversary. Tell us what's happening here.
So officially, I think the opening was January 19th, but we're kind of celebrating this whole year, the 25th anniversary. So we're going to have a little shindig, starting at 5:30 p.m. till 8:30 p.m., and there's going to be all kinds of fun stuff going on. If you know anything about DBR restaurants and Jesse and the No Name and Boneyard and Butcher's Chop House, they are awesome at doing hospitality and getting stuff together. So don't miss that. We're going to do have all kinds of interesting stuff. We're going to have some drawings that you can participate in. Anybody can participate in. No purchase necessary. We're going to be giving away some Epic passes, some local Epic passes. We're going to give away some state park passes. And then we've got a bunch of just kind of cool, interesting stuff to hand out. So anybody who walks in the door, we'll give you a ticket and you can be a part of it.
All right.
And there's a lot of other cool stuff that's going to be going on. So it's...
So I was going to say, state law does not allow you to give away alcohol.
Oh, that's right.
But you can. You're going to be treating people to something to eat, too.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
Nope. Yep, we'll have a nice buffet.
All right. Hey, do you have any of the limited edition items or
absolutely
anything going on?
We got some really cool stuff. We've got some limited edition mugs, pint glasses, T-shirts, hats. We've got a really cool lapel pin that's going to be a collector's item. So should be some fun stuff.
Okay. Anything else you want?
Lots of swag bags.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And I'm guessing, yeah, when people hear free giveaways, it's like, okay, get there early, I'm guessing.
Absolutely. Again, it's starting at 5:30. you know, No Name Saloon, as Jesse was talking about the expansion and stuff, we have the Annex Burger is a part of No Name Saloon, and that's the family-friendly side of No Name Saloon now, so because we always found the demand for people that we were having to turn away from the door. So now we've got a section that's available for families. Unfortunately, or fortunately, or however you want to look at it, that will be closed on that during that party because we're going to expand into that space, expanding so that people can be in there. So come on down.
Okay, 21 and older.
21 and older.
All right. Well, congratulations, Jesse. It's hard to believe it's been 25 years, but yeah, good job.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's interesting to look back on that and think that all about that's occurred in 25 years, not only for us at No Name Saloon and Diversified Bars and Restaurants, but in this town as a whole. I mean, what a shift.
Yeah. Okay, that's Matt Sullivan and Jesse Shetler with Diversified Bars and Restaurants. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
We look forward to seeing you guys down there.
Great.